Aye.
It's an early show. You'll be leaving home. I know you gotta go. Now you're all grown. And I feel my time is up. So go while the going's good. Doing what you should. I guess it's understood. Life is moving on. All those years are gone. Head on down New Orleans. Try some of that gumbo. Roll up your sleeves. I'm not saying that I won't cry. And it's not really the end. Just a riverboat heading round the bend. These days, it's been kind of hard. You want to be in charge in your own backyard. You've been hard to take. Sleeping Beauty's time to wake. Now, you know it won't be long. You're getting so headstrong. Don't like the old camp song. Life is moving on. And the good old days are gone. So head on down to New Orleans. Try some of that gumbo. Enjoy the scene. I'm not saying that I won't. It's not really the end, just a riverboat heading round the bend. Now on, have to shift my gears, hope that my head clears. Have a couple beers, you're like a bird that's flown. Now you're really on your own. I hope that the winds are kind. You're always on my mind till the end of time. I don't know what's next, but we'll both be doing our best. So head on down New Orleans. Try some of that gumbo. Save some for me. I'm not saying that I won't cry. And it's not really the end. Just a riverboat heading round the bend. And you can see the world through your own eyes. So many ways to be surprised. Sometimes things won't turn out like you dream. Just remember what I said. It's not really the end. Just a riverboat. So head on down New Orleans. Try some of that gumbo. Do what you please. I'm not saying that I won't cry. And it's surely not the end. Just a riverboat heading round the bend. Just a riverboat going straight ahead.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio's music show. I'm your host, Lisa Smith, and you just heard an awesome song. It's actually the very first song from Bay Area singer-songwriter Robert Stoner. It's from his debut album. It is called Year of Pain, but you just heard the very beginning song on the album. Actually, Year of Pain is the closing one. You heard Just a Riverboat. It's one of my favorites on the album, and as soon as you hear it, I'm sure just like you did, you want to hear the whole album, and I wish we could play the whole album today. But welcome to the show, Robert. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. It's really an honor to be on your show.
Listen, your album is terrific. It's got a little bit of everything in there for us to chew into. And it's one of those albums that you don't listen to once, you listen to it again and again. And I think I'll be listening to it for a long time. And I know people connect with you in regards to like Leonard Cohen and Bob Dylan, and I can totally hear that. But I love it because you really just have your own style. You just sink into the album as a listener. Have you got a lot of feedback about that?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate, you know, the initial connection to the Bob Dylan-ish, Leonard Cohen-ish kind of sound, but I feel like I have a lot of influences in my life. I have a classical background, so it's not overtly classical what I'm writing, but I feel like some of the forms and some of the musical thoughts come from that. I'm a real fan of musical theater, you know, Stephen Sondheim and Jerome Kern and the like. And so I really enjoy that. Try to bring that in. You know, I like the crazy lyricists like Randy Newman or somebody like that, you know, that kind of, and he has a bit of a showbiz background as well. And, you know, I think I have a little bit of a pop sensibility as well. You know, I kind of know what maybe is going to sound good and allow you to kind of get into the music without it necessarily always being too serious, you know?
Yeah, it just sneaks in as you listen to the album. It's just so easy to listen to, you know, it's just, right. It's enjoyable and it's like an old friend and, you know, yet you're not, it's your music, you know what I mean? It's your style, your sound, which I really love when you get an album like this, that it's timeless. It's a classic. And I think you've got a lot of flow and everything just flows together. You started with a riverboat, so it's got to flow. But, you know, it wasn't because this last year was like everything just kind of blurred into each other, didn't it? It's not ending. You could do, you know, 2 years of pain right now.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, speaking of flow, I mean, just a riverboat is there's nothing like the flow of having a child, a daughter in this case, you know, who goes through life and, you know, you have all the ups and downs with them. And then they go off into the college years and they leave home and you know, you don't know exactly what the next step is going to be. And you're both hopeful, you know, so it's really the flow of life, through your children, is really it's a great kind of metaphor for the whole process, the whole life process that you're seeing right in front of you. You know,
yeah, it's kind of those cycles, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think they always talk about different chapters in your life. I think they're different cycles. Chapter to me sounds like you open, close, just kind of square. Whereas the cycle just keeps. You know, because the cycles, it's a wheel, so it never ends. You know, it's like life; energy doesn't die.
Exactly.
You know?
Wow. So that's part of what I was going for on that song, and of course, New Orleans itself has a real musical feel, a feel of, you know, you feel very alive when you're in New Orleans, you know, with the music, the food, the culture, and so, you know, I thought that was a good jumping off point for a song about a kid going off. And I guess, you know, it was not that difficult to come up with that metaphor because my daughter on her way to her East Coast college was going to take a week in New Orleans with a friend as sort of the last dance before.
Party time.
Exactly. Well, I don't know how much partying she was doing, but anyway, that's where the idea for the song came about.
So with the album, did you know that you were going to put this together as an album, or these songs that you're just writing and go, oh, this is a nice collection? How did that come together?
I'm a pretty prolific writer. I'm always writing a song. Maybe I finish a song every week or two. So I have stored up probably 40 or 50 songs, and not all of them have been produced, but I had to kind of look through them and try to figure out which ones I wanted to get produced first. And, with some sort of a theme in mind, but mostly it wasn't really a theme so much as, I wanted somebody to listen to the album and that it would feel like it was of a piece, but that each song would be individualistic enough that, you wouldn't get that feeling that I often get when I listen to stuff, that I'll listen to three or four songs and then I've had enough and I move on to the next thing. I was aiming for something that, would potentially be able to keep your interest through a whole 9 or 10 or 11 songs.
See, that's going back to jambalaya and New Orleans, because and that's why we're the blend, right? It's sometimes concept albums can be absolutely amazing, but it's like sometimes the songs are there are just because, oh, we got to keep building the concept instead of allowing something to be individualistic. You can have flow and individuality.
Right. So I think you encapsulized what I was going for pretty well, because I don't think it's a concept album. I think there's stuff that's coming from all different points of view, but it's an, I think the way I write songs and the way I come at it, gives its own thematic, it's me. It's the way I see things. So in that sense, everything I write is part of that concept, but I don't like it.
Well, I was just thinking with your music, because of the flow, are you writing, I know you play guitar, but are you writing lyrics, or are you hearing the melodies, or is it a little bit of, whatever the song does?
Yeah, I really, I come at it with, I strum around on my guitar or on the piano sometimes.
Okay.
And I just come up with a good, I'll just keep doing it until something jives, and I usually don't really have, an idea of what the song is or of lyrics or anything. It's just I get a rhythm or a melody that really sticks with me, and then I just start singing kind of nonsense words or lyrics with that to try to get the flow of the song to go with that initial rhythmic or melodic pulse. And then from there, the song kind of writes itself. But the hard part for me is getting, well, it's hard part and the easy part. The hard part is to get that, to get that initial pulse or that initial sort of riff or that initial melodic essence that you say, oh, well, I could build on that. And then the song just kind of builds itself once I get that. So, and I have to be kind of very picky about. So what I tend to do is I write really late at night, and I have a bunch of ideas that I put down. And I think that maybe one of them is enough of a good pulse or riff that it's gonna be able to grow a song. But I go to bed and I wake up in the morning and I play. I've recorded those four or five ideas, and I'm able at that point to see them with clear eyes, and I say, nah, that one. That one lived overnight, it sounded good to me at 2 in the morning, and it still sounds good at 9 in the morning. So,
wow.
So, right, So then that's the one I'll build the song on. So
what do you do with the others? Do you like 100% kill the babies? I mean,
I don't kill them, but they're on my iPhone recorded. And occasionally I go back to them and see whether maybe I was wrong in moving on from that idea. But typically, unless it really grabs me, I won't spend the time to flesh it out, because I figure, you know, even if I flesh mm-hmm. that song out the best it could be, it can't really be great. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure we all kind of say, well, once in a while we have a great idea. Sometimes we have pretty good ideas. Other times we're just mimicking other people's ideas, you know, and you can have those gradations, and you want to go with your great ideas, and the ones that are, you're not sure if they're great or not. Maybe they're not good enough to.
Just not ripe. They're not ripe. There's a feeling you get, like, just even in business, you know, oh, I want to create this, you know, and business is creativity. I believe you're an economist. That's creativity. We need creativity when it comes to money.
That's exactly right. And I feel like when I'm doing my economics, I feel the same way. You know, I'm like trying to write a report or something. And a lot of times I'll spend some time, you know, writing a paragraph or writing a section of my report. And, you know, when I come back to it the next day and I read it, I think, you know, that was wasted effort. I'm throwing that out and starting again, you know, because I got to get some kernel of something here that really sings, you know. It's not just kind of going through the motions.
That's interesting about that connection. Of course, music and numbers go hand in hand, you know, mathematics and flow, right. But to get people to listen to new music sometimes is difficult. Everyone's, you know, we get used to our familiar songs and you want to hear them over and over. Your album is very easy to just get right into it immediately and just go with it. But when you think about economics or history, right, there's often that time where you say, okay, let's talk about numbers and, you know, finance and or insurance or something. People just go, nah, you know, it's like, boom. How do you transfer that importance and make it that people's minds will be open? So it's still communication in a way with what you're doing.
Absolutely. You know, that's what I feel like. You know, if I write a 60-page report or an 80-page report, I have to keep the person.
Oh my God, you do that?
Reading it, engaged.
How do you do it?
It's not a novel, so you know. But I'm writing for a judge or a jury will be reading it, or a legal team will be reading it. You know, and it has to hold their interest, and it has to. You know, in my mind, it has to really be creative. And so I feel like I'm pushing the same buttons to some degree, albeit a different milieu, you know, when I'm doing my work as I am when I'm doing my songwriting.
Let's talk a little bit more about the album Year of Pain. The principle to me, it's just actually really interesting, even how you put the songs together, you know, on the album. But the principle, like, you're all like on the riverboat and you feel tender, you feel the emotion, and you also feel like there's a little bit of excitement because something new, right? And then all of a sudden the principle comes and you're like, it's a lot of feeling in there. And I feel like that it really gets into what our country feels like. You've got a lot of, you know, you could take a lot of the songs. I know that even talk about marriage, right? And relationships, but you could look at that also politically, you know, if you wanted to.
Right. I try to go sort of back and forth between those things. And even in that song, I mean, I think you're right. It's definitely, that's probably the angriest song on the album. The song that feels like the most can't we even agree on the most basic principles anymore?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because you know, it always seemed growing up that while we had our political differences, you know, that they were between different principled ways of looking at the world, not, you know, one group that had some principles and another group that didn't have any principles, you know.
Yeah.
So that seemed like a theme that was really ripe for a political song. But, you know, I thought it also had, you know, personal and, you know, non-political overtones as well, because, you know, in the way we carry out our lives, our relationships, you know, we have to have principles, we have to have, you know, we have to stand up for what's really important to us, let's say, in a relationship. We can't just turn the other cheek and mm-hmm. and pretend like everything's fine when it's not.
No head in the sand.
No head in the sand, which is probably the non-political aspect of that same idea, you know, mm-hmm. that we, so you're absolutely right. I think, and, you know, I mean, I thought the best line in that song, The Principle, is something like, I can't remember the exact line, but it's that these people that have no principles, the one principle that they do have is, you know, that they know that they have no principles. That's their principle.
That's,
you know,
scary. Yeah, it's so scary.
Yeah.
It really is, you know, when you think about what this, you know, the country and the world is going through right now, it feels like we're going back into a cycle again. Here we go, you know, and the relationships, what do we have if we don't build relationships and reach across aisles or whatever we want to call it anymore? Tired of that word, but it's, you know, what do we have if we don't have a relationship, whether it's a personal, intimate relationship, friendship, family, but if we don't have relationships where we can solve problems together, what do we have? What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, you know, another aspect of it, which is a slightly more political one, is that, you know, I don't think we really have shared principles if we don't have a shared history that we all understand and mm-hmm. sort of come to. And I think one of the biggest weaknesses of what's happening in our country now is that, you know, people haven't really absorbed the lessons of history. They don't know about the origins of our country, the contradictions in our country. You know, I think one of the things that makes families, you know, potentially be close is because, you know, typically families know their histories, they know where they came from, and they know, you know, the personal stories of everyone in the family. They know all the foibles of everybody in the family. They know the true stuff. And so you can share that and find common ground. Well, I think the same thing has to occur on the larger global mm-hmm. or country political level. You know, we have to understand where we've come from as a country. We have to understand our history. We have to understand, I mean, when you look at Afghanistan or something and you see that we kind of just did Vietnam all over again.
No kidding, right?
And, you know, there doesn't seem to be any understanding of that or any, and likewise, you know, that people don't seem to have a sense of all the contradictions in our history. You know, the fact that we were founded by you know, people that were breaking away and wanting religious freedom and all that, and they were setting up a system that, you know, had so many contradictions that didn't allow people exactly look like them and come from the same countries, their own freedom. And it's not just like African Americans. I was hearing a podcast yesterday about the way the Chinese were treated in California and in the West. You know, they built all the railroads and they were not allowed to own land. Mm-mm. You know, I mean, it's like unbelievable. They were actually written in the law that you know, a Chinese person couldn't own land in California. You know, it's like, really?
except for we're going to do all the work, you know, and it's kind of interesting now with what's happening on the borders. It's like, okay, who's picking your produce and building your houses? You know,
right.
it's a very blinded kind of society, and it's not just here, which is to me the sad part of it. I think music and the arts, you know, we talk about this a lot on the show, are the true, it's where the truth is in what's going on in the world over the years. The music, because right. musicians and artists, they're like, that is part of art. It's about how to get people to swallow the pill. You know what I mean? In a way.
Exactly.
Or feel something. We get deaded, or we get point, you know, how many shootings have we had in this country with kids being shot in schools and people getting shot in churches or going out to a nightclub? There's all these shootings, and then all of a sudden or go to Walmart or wherever it is, and you see it over and over, and people become numb. It's, you know, and that's what I think why the arts are so important, because we start to not feel.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, I think from that standpoint, you know, I bring a little bit of a different point of view to some of my art than maybe a typical person because of my economics training. You know, I mean, economists tend to be sometimes have more faith in the free market than other people. And so I have a vestige of that in my thinking, and I think it comes through sometimes in my songs about
attention to detail too. Like when I listen to your lyrics, it's like, they're really good. I mean, it's just, they're profound. There's certain words I'm just like, wow, yet they flow. It's not like, you know, you could have the perfect writing, but if it doesn't flow, it's not, you know, you know what I mean? It's like these are just the coolest words that mean the same thing, but if it doesn't roll off the tongue or feel easy to read, it doesn't work.
You got it. Yeah, exactly.
So there's that geekness of, I'm not calling you a geek, but you are geeking out on it. I mean that in the best way. You know?
I'll take it as a compliment. Thanks.
That is a compliment. It's because, you know, you have it. And I think that's a really big thing to have, is where you can have observation, attention to detail, but then put it into a bigger scheme. You know what I mean? It's like, sort of getting people to look at the little details or feel them.
Exactly.
Wow. What else can we solve today in world history? But also, okay, so Wait Until the Morning. I think that is a song that we can all relate to, whether it's romantic, but a family member, a friend, where we need to have that breath. And it's almost like what you're talking about, even with your songs, you wait until the morning, you know, it's you know, that, I mean, how many times have we, I mean, even Nancy and I have our little, you know, mother-daughter spit fights or whatever you want to call them. And we have a glass of wine and say, okay, you know, go to bed, get over it. And the next morning you go like, what was that about?
Exactly. And, you know, I think that's the rational person in me, the person that, you know, wants to think it through and not just go off emotionally. I mean, sometimes I've been told that, you know, I'm not emotional enough, you know, I'm too rational. And that's probably part of it. I mean, it, you know, because sometimes if you wait until the morning and, you know, it's all kind of, you've kind of lost the emotion of the moment, and you're all in your rational phase. Sometimes, you know, that doesn't always work, for example, with my wife. I mean, sometimes it does when you, like you say, you see it more clearly in the morning. But on the other hand,
I want wine, you know, in between.
On the other hand, she'll say to me, but, you know, come on. I mean, we're not like having a scientific discussion here, you know, where you organized your thoughts after 10 hours after we had this spat, you know. So it can work both ways, but I'm definitely a wait until the morning person. My wife is more of a let's argue it out now kind of person.
Well, I wonder if that is a male female thing, because I think as women, we it's like you can't go to sleep until everything is solved. You want everything to be perfect. And that's why we get into cleaning phases. Like if we're in the middle of a drama, it's like, get away. I don't want to see your face. I don't want to hear about it, but I really want it all fixed right now. I want you to solve everything and agree with everything I just said.
Right. And so I've learned that trick too, because I know my wife is not going to let us go to sleep until she feels like I've either apologized or that I've sort of mouthed the words that she wants me to mouth. And so sometimes we solve our problems that way, but I think, but I would prefer to be able to discuss it, you know, when everybody has just had some time to breathe and think everything through.
Yeah, I'm putting the wine back in it. It makes everything better because that has to breathe. The good wine has to breathe. But, you know, it's when you put in the, so it's really an album of human, like society in a way, when you think of it and how we handle all these things. I mean, going through COVID, we started to think everything was getting better. And then it's like, no, sorry, we're going to give you another variant or two to deal with. And we're not going to agree on that. Life and death, apparently, dying doesn't really mean much to some, you know, so Year of Pain. I love even the title of it, because I think we all felt so many things. People lost people, not just to COVID, you know, and people lost people not getting the healthcare they needed during COVID. I mean, there's been so much, and it's politically, you know, there's been a lot of loss this past year, I think.
That's right. And, you know, I mean, there's not only pain associated with those events like the loss of life and COVID, or the loss of life when there's like a school shooting and gun. Mm. There's not only the pain of that, but then there's the pain of seeing that we don't react well, or we don't take the measures that need to be taken to minimize the pain. I mean, you know, after a school shooting with all that pain, we can't bring ourselves to, you know, pass gun laws or do anything to alleviate that. You know, when we have this COVID outbreak and all the pain associated with that, we have leaders that are telling us that we should just go about our lives as if nothing is happening, which causes more pain, more, you know, outbreaks. And so, you know, it's sort of a double pain because there's so much death and dying, but then there's also the pain of knowing that we're, as a country or as individuals, we're not doing our best to try to take measures that could alleviate some of that pain.
It's like climate change and global warming. It's the same thing. It's I don't know what more has to be out there, but let's argue about things and create conspiracy theories. And sure, I'm sure there's some of those conspiracy theories out there. You know, we know Area 51 is real. So exactly. There's your conspiracy theory, you know, but there's, I think it's at this point, and I think there's a lot of pain in families and friendships where you want to keep being able to have discussions, but it's like, no, we can't talk about that with so-and-so, you know, so it's like the North and South again, in a way.
Exactly. You know, and I mean, I felt, you know, tremendous pain and empathy, for example, with this recent Hurricane Ida. Oh, man. And, you know, it just wiped out those barrier islands right outside of New Orleans there, and you saw these people returning to their communities and everything was just gone. I had a tremendous feeling of empathy and pain, but on the other hand, you know, I know that there are measures that we can take, you know, that might make for less pain in the future, and we're not taking them, and that's really painful to me, you know.
Yeah, New Orleans, we've actually been covering climate change over the years for New Orleans and that area in specific, and then spent a lot of time out. We go out, I mean, the last week we've been out in swamps with gators. So if I'm still scratching, it's from mosquito bites. But honestly, there's a ton that is being done, but because it's not enough people doing it, it's not fast enough, right? And so like the coastal areas should have buffer zones. It's like certain areas on the coast of California, you know, it is, the bluffs are falling. So like, move your house. If the Sierra Club comes and tells you, you really need to move your house, or, you know, let it be, let nature do its thing. Nature has these, you know, buffer zones, and we've taken the buffer zones out. And, you know, we've taken native plants out, we've taken trees down. And the more we don't plant trees, the worse it's going to get. I'll go on and on and on. I'll behave now.
Yeah, but you're right about all of that. And even in our own personal relationships, you know, we don't always take the measures that we need to take to alleviate what one can see is going to be a painful situation. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't stand up for what we need. Right, exactly. And so, you know, it's it's really the human condition. Pain is a human condition that we all empathize about. But there are measures, that's the economist in me, there is measures that we can take, whether personal or political, you know, to alleviate the pain and to make life better. You know,
COVID is interesting because even right now we're watching the lack of people going back to their jobs, and it's not just because of the money, the stimulus money, or any of that money, right? It's people making life choices. Some people are like, why was I following the hamster wheel? Why was I we're back to the cycle. I don't need to do that. I can live on less and be happier and, you know, be with my family, be with, you know, we can do it this way. Maybe I will homeschool my kids. Not saying they're, you know, that that's right or wrong. I'm just, this is a big change is coming in that way in a big sector. And employers are having to look at how they treat their employees. So it's kind of like the minimum wage went up on its own right now. But okay, just over this, it's almost like we unionized and went on strike, and in our own way, without it, even the political or the political system or the judicial system, right? But at the
The market, because as people reevaluate their lives, there's less labor supply, right? Because people are holding back and saying, you know, I'm not going to go back into that hamster wheel. And so, you know, there's still, you know, plenty of demand for restaurant food. And so, you know, the restaurant has to pay a higher wage in order to potentially, you know, get some of those people who are reluctant to return. Because, you know, if the wage is high enough, even if the work is difficult, you know, if you're able to earn a living wage, maybe you'll go back to work. So, you know,
it is, the balance is interesting, but I also wonder, like, there was pain in the beginning of confusion, fear creates pain, right? And so we have that, and then people going, you know, I really do want to take a walk every day, understanding why dogs need to go take a walk. People started to get that, understand what claustrophobia is like, and having these other understandings and making better life choices. And so while we have this whole thing happening with employment, and it's created a lot more entrepreneurs, which is great, but there's also people that just reverted right back to the same, like, I'm just going to keep being greedy or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, I thought a lot of people would learn lessons from it, but they didn't, is my point.
Yeah.
But that's society, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think, you know, I think it's events like this that, you know, are they really fundamental enough that people are going to change? So a good amount of people are going to change. You know, I think, for example, you know, the Great Depression or whatever, you know, nothing ever returned to the way it was.
That's true.
You know, we learned about the need for a social safety net then, and those kinds of things. And it's fundamentally changed the way we think about our lives and the role of government in our lives. And I think this is going to be, I think there is going to be along the lines that you just said, you know, when we're home for, you know, day after day, and in this case, year after year, and you can you can operate so much more in consonance with the rhythms of life when you're home. You see that, you know, you can go out in the backyard in the morning for 10 minutes instead of rushing to get to the subway or something. You know, you can watch the birds feed in your pond or something, and get to know them a little better, and just all kinds of things, spending a little more time with your mm-hmm. loved ones or making a meal together or whatever. And I think we just get much more in tune with the rhythms of life. And once you do that, you know, it's a little bit like what used to happen on a temporary basis when you like went on a camping trip for two weeks and
yeah.
you know, you were out in nature and you like, you did a whole reset, you know, and some people did that and then like never returned to their normal, but very few. but I think this is going to be society wide. A lot of people are doing the equivalent of camping out, you know, at a national park for two weeks and seeing, oh my God, this life that I was living before really wasn't all it seemed to be, you know. And so there's going to be fundamental changes.
Well, it goes back to the details too, right? So the observance, we go back to that's a story of it. When you go to nature and you actually take that moment to watch the birds, instead of just, oh, the birds are chirping, it's time to get up, you know. It's you know what I mean, it's you start looking at the little things in your life, you start to have more wonder in your life, and you start to wonder, like, how did that bug get all that interesting markings on it, you know?
Exactly.
So I think we're going more into that. And I mean, that can really save the planet in a lot of ways in relationships, because it is the little details. When you think about love, you know, when people are attracted to each other, it's the little details that attract you. And it's the quirky, weird ones. And then when you get into a certain point of that relationship, they can become the irritants, you know, and you have to kind of remember why. It's an interesting thing how we go, you know, we twirl around. But I wanted to ask, are you going to go perform live? Are you performing live with the songs from the album and your other songs?
That's a real hurdle for me. You know, I have a little bit of performance anxiety, and I sort of, I'm a decent guitar player, but not a great guitar player. And, you know, to me, if I could figure out a way to be, you know, in a band, you know, where people would be singing my songs and have a backup guitarist and a drummer and go into it that way. But that's a little hard to come by. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, as a singer-songwriter right now, I sort of pay other musicians to help me record my songs and produce my songs. But, you know, so, well, I guess I assume Bob Dylan pays all his musicians, right? So yeah. But, you know, it's kind of a different process than, you know, being part of a band when you're like in the ninth grade or something, you know, and you're like this great band that's going to go out and take the world by storm. So I guess I have to figure out how to do it in a singer-songwriter way. And maybe it's just, you know, that I have to encourage a few of my, a few of the musicians that have helped me put together this album, you know, to venture onto the stage with me and do that.
I mean, yeah.
Do you have thoughts about that, or what the best way
I think to... it'd be, I always think live music is the best on the planet. And it's, you know, to me, I get all excited about it because I love music, you know, and seeing people perform it live is really cool. And with all, and I've performed live a lot, and it's, there's something, the songs change in the moment. The song can change just according to who you're performing for, you know, the exactly. energy in the room. And so it has a different life. And it's different all the time. I love live albums too, just because it's like the energy of the room is captured into that recording. But it'd be awesome, I think. And even if you do live streams, you know, maybe that would be awesome too for people to see you perform. I think it'd be great. So you on the album, you have a few people. You have a couple ladies singing in there.
Right.
And Ben, you said Ben Bernstein. Am I getting the producer?
Yes, and he also sort of plays the lead guitar or the, you know, the more fancy licks and bass guitar as well, and does the producing, right? And one of the female voices is my daughter.
Yeah.
Lily, who's at school now. And
She did the artwork too for the cover.
She did the artwork for the cover. Uh-huh. And she's the one I sing about in that song, Just a Riverboat as well. So even though she's not named as such.
That's awesome. Well, it has been a true pleasure having you on the show here for Big Blend Radio. Everyone, you can go get Robert's music. It's robertstoner.bandcamp.com. Go to Bandcamp. Bandcamp is especially great on Fridays. All the music goes to the musicians. When you're purchasing online, it's really important to look at where you're getting it. But no matter what, get it. Go get it. It's an awesome album from front to back. And you obviously heard the very first song. And now we're going to close with A Year of Pain. And I do want to give a thank you to the National Parks Arts Foundation for sponsoring today's show. They are an awesome organization. And what they do is they take writers, artists, performers, musicians, filmmakers, photographers, whatever you do in the arts, you can apply to do one of their residencies where you get to stay in a national park for a full month and create. I think you should do that, Bob. Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, you get to stay in this beautiful house overlooking the ocean, and they have a recording studio in the house.
Wow.
And good coffee from what everything I've heard. There's Dry Tortugas National Park, you get your own island for a full month. Off grid. Talk about that resetting, right? And so it's then Chaco Canyon up in northern New Mexico. So it's really an amazing organization. So everyone, nationalparksartsfoundation.org, and keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. But now we're going to close with Year of Pain. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I really appreciated it.
It's been fun. Take care. I think we conquered the world.
Could never find you, someone there behind you, your stock and barrel clean. Don't know how to say it, you don't need to play it with your magazine. So much to overcome, find the answers one by one. I just hope we get there before the gun. Got to be a different way. I tell myself that every day. How much longer now till we see the sun? I could never learn it, so hard to discern it. It's your secret door. Don't know where it's leading, just know that it's bleeding. Can't go there anymore. So much to overcome. There's some truth that must be won. I just hope we get there before the gun. There's got to be a different way. I tell myself that every day. How much longer now till we see the sun? Knows the order, which way may be shorter when we meet tonight. Let go of the trigger underneath your finger. Year of pain, feel the rain. Walk on down by the riverside where dreams are made. Part of a to overcome. There's a struggle to be won. I just hope we get there before the gun. There's got to be a different way. I tell myself that every day. How much longer now till we see the sun? Never tell you, I could never sell you on a different way. You've got your intention, I still need to mention.